bought box seats. They're right down here in the front. You're welcome to. So we have a couple different kinds of announcements here today. First, I'm going to have Al come up and tell us how stewardship is rolling along.
Morning. So, big things. Saturday night, stewardship dance party. Get your boogie shoes on. No doubt there'll be Atomic Dog and other funk going on. I hear there's being rock and roll too, but we'll see. Stewardship. So today is the official day. We want all of our pledges turned in. You all know that the pledges are necessary so that we can create a budget and do the good things we want to do. Where are we today? We have, at this point, about 70%, a little bit over, 70% of all the pledges that we got last year in. That has helped us to reach about 65-ish percent of our budget. Which means the remaining people that need to pledge need to get their pledges in so we can craft that budget. We do not want to do any reduction in what we're doing, so I'm appealing. Yes, if you haven't turned it in, turn it in. If you have, really no big deal if you want to increase it. So, where are we at in the goal of 250? We're at about 165,000 as of today. So, excellent, good work.
So where do we turn them in, Al?
There are forms, if you've lost yours, in the back of the room or find me afterwards. Otherwise, simply bring them into the office and leave them on the desk. There's an envelope to put them in. No big deal. Nobody's going to see what your pledge is. Nobody knows what we pledge, and frankly, if you pledge $130, that's great. $15 of that goes to the church because the dues that we pay to the UUA are about $115. Anything over that amount comes to help run this church. But whether you give us $130 in a year or you give us $20,000, you are equally valued. Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Al. Couple other quick announcements. On Sunday, April 6th, so the week after next Sunday. So next Sunday, the sermon title is Holy Humor Sunday, presented by our minister, Amy Shaw, which will look at how to find the sacred in the absurd. It will be lighthearted and will be a good Sunday to invite those people you've been wanting to invite to check out our church. Invite one and all, and let's make this a great guest Sunday as well. Also, if you volunteer your time, energy, or ideas to keep our church strong, please put your name on a leaf. We've got tree branches in the back. Add your name to a leaf and add your leaf to the tree. And then we can make it look like spring inside as well as it will eventually look outside. Our speaker today is Jay Ricard, a recent graduate of Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago, who is currently serving as the intern minister at Tree of Life Unitarian Universalist Congregation in McHenry, Illinois. And she could probably pass greetings to Gus to from us. Thank you and welcome.
Torah, you greetings from Tree of Life, where we are currently entertaining guests. I would like to invite you into worship with the following words. Of all we have, that which is of the greatest worth is each other. We invoke the spirit of mutual understanding to be with us in this our gathering this morning. May our words be softened by concern for those who we will later meet. May our acts be tempered by love. May we find ways to show gratitude to those who have helped us along our path, but may we also show gratitude to ourselves for the gifts we have allowed ourselves to receive. We pray for patience with each other's shortcomings. May our model of the world around us show us to be gentle, determined, wise, and humble, committed, and tolerant, and loving of those whose values appear to differ from our own for unknown reasons. Come, let us in the spirit of understanding and gratitude worship together. And now, would you please take a moment to greet the people around you?
Flame that we light, gather us into the warmth of this community and be kindled in each of us. Please stand as you are willing and able and join me in our opening hymn, number 354, We Laugh, We Cry. We're going to sing verses number 1 and number 4.
Thank you.
to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey, and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether people perceive you as Jeff the Dude Lebowski, when you're really more like Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, or see you as Bob Marley, when you're really more like Neil Patrick Harris, we welcome you. Whether you were raised on Julie Garland, but feel like Diana Ross, Billy Joe Armstrong, or Patti Smith, you are welcome here. Whether you are a welder working on becoming a dancer, a poet with a knack for cabinetry, or the drummer in a jug band of doctors of psychology, we welcome you, and we hope that you will share in this community and add your own story with ours. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of fabulous upcoming church activities, and we welcome you, whether member, visitor, or friend, to participate in all that is offered. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics. And again, we welcome you all here this morning. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we care for our wider community is by contributing to our local food pantries, both financially and through our collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have a food item to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service. There's the basket, or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And now, I invite the children to come forward and enjoy a story.
All right, here we go. Uh-oh, we got a latecomer. Find a spot. Oh, more. All right. So, our story this morning is a guy whose name was Ezekiel Johnson. They called him Zeke. And he's kind of a big guy. He never makes it into the newspaper unless he gets in trouble. And he's a great big guy. He's got white hair. And he's homeless. But he has a shopping cart that he pushes around and collects aluminum cans, so he gets a little bit of money from that. And Zeke set up this cardboard house in this little 15-foot alleyway right behind the local movie theater. And Zeke kept it really clean back there, so nobody said anything, and they let him stay. But eventually the theater got sold and torn down. And the new owners, they wanted to make a big fancy coffee house back there. So they decided to use that alleyway where Zeke's cardboard house was put out some outside coffee tables. So when they started trying to get him out of there, they found out he really owned that little piece of land. They didn't know what to do. It was his land. He lived there in his cardboard house. And so they asked if they could buy it. And he said, sure. And he got $14,000 for that little piece of land where his cardboard house was. And for a man that was homeless, that's a lot of money. So the church started getting involved, and everybody started getting involved. And what they wanted to do was help him take his money and get a room so he could get out of the cold and he wouldn't have to live in the, out in the street anymore. And he said, no. No, that's not what I want to do. So they were just all really concerned and didn't know what he was going to do with all this money. And finally, he said, I'm donating it to the homeless shelter so that people can have coats in the winter. People started asking him, why are you giving your money away? Aren't you homeless? A man ain't just what he owns, he said. And when they tried to ask him for more, it was clear that he just didn't want to listen. He was giving his money to the homeless shelter, and that's all he was doing. And pretty soon he found another place to put up his little cardboard house, and he got his little shopping cart, and off he went again. And nobody probably would have ever thought about it again until the next December, when they had a really, really cold winter. We know how cold winter can be, don't we? Yeah. And so a newspaper reporter found him. And she shivered while she was interviewing him. And she was talking to all the other people around him. And she said, aren't you guys out here cold? And they said, well, the food kitchen down the way is a big help. And we all got good coats from Zeke. So cold as it is, it looks like we're going to make it. And so the reporter kept asking Zeke, and she kept saying, why did you give all your money away? And he said, I don't think much about it. I'm just glad people got coats. And she said, why did you buy the coats? And he said, he that hath two coats, let him impart to him that hath none. Which means exactly what she said. Means you got to be more than what you own. And the reporter couldn't come up with a good response to that. So she decided to try the interview again. And this time she suggested that Zeke must be really proud of himself for making a useful contribution on such a cold night. Nothing to be proud of, he said. I just did it. That didn't seem like a good closing line to her, so she tried it again. And this time she said, I'm proud of you. Alright, who gets this? Uh-oh, we got a fight over the lantern. We sing the children to their classrooms.
Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully received. Thank you. This is a time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone. Briefly introduce yourself and share your joy or concern.
Hi, this is Amy. Please light a candle of joy for our daughter Isabel. It's her birthday today. She's 13. I half jokingly thought I would have you light another candle of concern because we're parents of a teenager now, but I've decided to make that a joy as well. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Beth, and a candle of joy. Chris and I celebrated our 18th anniversary last Monday.
Hi, this is Mark. A candle of joy for my daughter Maria, who recently got engaged.
Robert, would you light a candle for my uncle, Elworth Beckman, who died Wednesday at age 95?
Hi, this is Kirsten. I have a joy. My daughter-in-law, who suffered a traumatic brain injury in October, is doing very well, trying to navigate her new life with the skills that she has. But I think we're looking at a pretty good recovery here.
This is Tom, and I'm just really happy about the return of the bicycle commuting season.
Hi, this is Tom, and this is Leanne, and I just wanted a candle of joy. We had a great retreat yesterday. Everything went smoothly and had a lot of fun.
Al here, sorry I missed the retreat. It was a sappy day. So a candle of joy for the flowing of sap and the upcoming making of maple syrup at Corrales.
First reading is going to be a responsive reading by Sophia Lyons Foss from our hymnals. It's number 657. And I will read the Roman, and you have the italics. This is called It Matters What We Believe. Some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged. Some beliefs are like shadows clouding children's days with fears of unknown calamities. Some beliefs are divisive, separating the saved from the unsaved, friends from enemies.
Other beliefs are bonds
Some beliefs are like blinders, shutting off the power to choose one's own direction.
Other beliefs are like gateways, opening the eyes to exploration.
Some beliefs weaken a person's selfhood. They blight the growth of resourcefulness.
Our beliefs nurture self-confidence, enrich the feeling of personal worth.
Some beliefs are rigid, like the body of death, impotent in a changing world.
Our beliefs are pliable, like the young sapling, ever-growing in the upward thrust of life.
So our meditation today isn't really a meditation. It isn't really a centering or a silence or a prayer. It's just something to think about and take with you when you leave. And it comes from the Quakers, and I love the Quakers because they just sort of have this way of putting things into perspective. And it goes like this. A man who had just moved into a small town in Pennsylvania fell into a conversation with an old Quaker who was in the habit of sitting on a bench in the quiet square in the center of the little town. "What kind of people live here?" asked the newcomer. The old Quaker replied, "What kind of people didst thou live amongst before?" "Oh, they were mean, narrow-minded, suspicious, and very unfair," answered the man. Then said the Quaker, "I'm sorry, but thee will find the same manner of people here." Not long after, another newcomer joined the bench and asked the same question, and like his predecessor was asked, "What manner of people didst thou live amongst before?" A warm smile spread over his face. "Friends," he answered, "they were the best folk in the world. They were always friendly, kind, lovable, and I hated to leave them." The old Quaker beamed. "Welcome, neighbor," he said. "Be of good cheer, for thee will find the same people here." Let us now rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 345, "With Joy We Claim the Growing Life."
Jerry Flakus, and my wife and Esther and I have been members of this church since 1997. And Al asked me if I'd share a testimonial with you, which I'm happy to do because this place is so important to us. And to do that, I'm going to trace a little bit of my own journey in getting here. From my hometown of Sauk City, Wisconsin, whose claim to fame right now seems to be the birthplace of Culver's, home of the Butter Burger. But when I was a kid there, my mother belonged to a freethinker society in Sauk City, it's called the Free Congregation of Sauk City. But she always referred to it as the Freigemeinde. And the Freigemeindes were German free-thinkers organizations that were brought to this country during the great German immigration of the 1840s and 1850s. And her roots go back to her great-grandparents, who were members of the original Freigemeinde up in Nuremberg, which is north of Prairie du Sac. So anyway, that Freethinker Society has morphed into a Free Congregation of Sauk County now. It exists as a UU fellowship. So after we got married, we lived out east, and we didn't go to church at all until one day one of my fellow that I work with introduced us to the Unitarian Fellowship of Newark, Delaware. We were living in southeastern Pennsylvania at the time. So we joined that organization. We were there for about 5 years. It was wonderful, a wonderful, friendly group. And at that time, that organization was about 50 people. Now, I just looked on the UUA website this morning, and they're up to about 200, so they're doing quite well there. Well, then we moved back to Wisconsin in 78, and for a time, we belonged to the UU Church West in Brookfield. We lived out in Oconomowoc, and that was a long haul, and for various reasons that didn't really work out, so we resumed to our non-church-going ways for a number of years. And then we lived in the Chicago suburbs, and Esther found the UU Church, the Countryside Church in Palatine, Illinois, and so we were members of that for about 4 years. And in 97, we moved back to Wisconsin. We bought our house in Delafield. The Lake Country UU Church was renting space in the Presbyterian Church in Delafield, which is a short distance from our house. We stopped by one evening, and I can remember being greeted by Yvonne Fort, and she and everybody made us feel so welcome there. We joined right away, and we've been members ever since. So now we've seen this organization, LCUUC, grow from when we were renting churches in Delfield, and then in Wales, we were stuck at about 60 members. And then we made our great leap of faith, and we bought this building, and our membership almost immediately doubled to 120. It was in 2006. And then since that time, we were kind of stuck at that 120 members, and we made another great leap of faith, and we called our minister, Amy, and we see our membership is taking off again. I believe we're getting close to 150 now, so the potential for this place is almost unlimited. I was going to say that the Freigemeindes, the Germans that found those Freigemeindes, they looked at it as a beacon of light and a sea of darkness and dogma. And I would say that this church is the same thing. It's kind of a beacon of light, and I guess you consider it a sea of darkness and dogma around here. The neat thing is that the population in northwest Waukesha County and the surrounding counties are such that we have potentially reaching hundreds of thousands of people who would find this place to be a good spiritual home. And I think it's up to all of us members of the church. We people are the church. The building is not the church, but it's up to us people to spread that light. So as the hymn goes, this little light of mine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
So, I have a friend who, every time we drive past a cemetery, says, there's another equalizer. Equalizer. I kept trying to imagine what it was she was seeing. And then she said, one day she said, it's the cemetery. When you get there, everyone is equal. You're the same as everyone else. There's no difference between people in there. And I thought about that for a moment, and I realized, yeah, she was so right. For the first time in a person's life, well, actually, for the second time in a person's life, the first time that we are completely equal is when we are born. The second time, unfortunately, is when we die.
cemetery. They're laying in there. Some might have on a better suit. Some might have on a prettier dress, but there's no difference. They're not going anywhere. They're just all there. They have become completely and totally evil. So on my way to work every day, I'm sort of a cemetery buff, and on my way to work every day, there's this little tiny cemetery, Cole Cemetery. And I often wonder, there's probably, I don't know, maybe 150 people there, buried there, if that. And I often wondered, was this a family cemetery? Was it a cemetery? Did that town used to be named Cole? What was going on? So I did some research, and I found that this cemetery was located on land that was originally owned by Mile Cole. And Mile came to Illinois in 1938. And so there's a lot of his family buried there. But you don't have to be a family member. And so among the people buried in the cemetery are two men, John Henry and Fred Hatch. So if we're walking through this cemetery and we're looking and we see the headstones of these two men, we see that Fred Hatch has this big headstone. John Henry has this little tiny one. Hatch is buried with a bunch of family members. Henry's kind of off on his own. We might perceive from this that Henry was a single man and Hatch had a big family. But again, we don't know that, we just perceive that. But if we do some research, we can find out that John Henry was an ex-slave, and he spent his time working, and he never really was able to get a lot of money. Fred Hatch, on the other hand, was the man that invented the silo. So in this cemetery that contains about 350 people, we have one man that was born and died in poverty, and another man that made a name for himself in his lifetime. And our perception of these two men, based on the headstones, was pretty good. Now they're both equal. They're both at rest. We, as human beings, are born into this world equal, and when we die, we are equal again. But there are so many things in our lives that affect our equality. Race, economic status, gender, gender identity, and the list goes on. These differences that occur during our lifetimes can cause us to be a judgmental group of people at times. It isn't our fault. Our learned and perhaps even subconscious attitudes towards other people are based on any number of their defining characteristics, and these help us to comprehend a situation and gauge our behavior accordingly. We look at what we see and we make an assessment on what is seen. We're not trying to be judgmental. We're just trying to make sense of what our eyes tell us. So perception is based on what it is that we see rather than the backstory or the history of what an individual person might be. We as Unitarian Universalists spend a lot of time looking at people and attempting to see the equality in all people. And I can say we're pretty dang good at it. Although somewhere in the back of our minds, on rare occasions, we do find we make judgments based on appearance. We may never verbalize these, and most times they're gone in the blink of an eye. We might not even know that we had that thought. Most times, we feel superior. There are other times when we feel inferior. And we can only do what it is that we can do in the blink of an eye as we look at others. We can't know their backstory. So at times, the impression or perception of another person is skewed. It doesn't take into account what that person has been through or what their history is. This is human nature. And although we attempt to find equality in all other humans,
Sometimes we feel inferior. Sometimes we feel way superior. And that's just the nature of the human being. So, perceptions and backstories. I'm going to start with myself. So, as I stand here today, you'll notice that I'm just a little bit bent over. It's okay. I have arthritis in my spine. It causes me to bend just a little bit. But as people look at me, due to the fact that I'm a little bent over, I've had people come up and say, well, if your posture was better, you would look better. Okay. If you stood up straight, you would look so much better. I've overheard people saying this, and yeah, it's true. If I could stand up straighter, I'd probably look better, but people see me, they have this perception, they perceive that I can just stand up straight, and it's going to make them feel better. So when I hear people say this, because I've heard it a lot, I have this image of their brains sort of acting like a little slot machine. The wheels are spinning, thoughts are going around, the brain is attempting to make sense of something that's just a little bent over. And I can see the brain going, bending down to pet the dog, no, that's not it. Bending over to pick something up, no, that's not it. Wait, I remember. My family members used to tell me that I should sit up straight or else I'd have bad posture when I grew up. Yep, that's it. The brain took a nanosecond to work this out. And it came up with something obscure from their history. But the backstory of the problem is simple. I just have arthritis in my spine. And it causes me to do strange things, become a little crooked, bend over. But now that you know that I have arthritis in my spine, now that you know why I bend over, it makes it better. You don't have to stop and think about all those things. You don't have to worry about, oh, am I bending over to pick something up? What am I doing? No. Do you understand it? And if I continue to tell you more about my life, there's a possibility that you could go from understanding to feeling sorry for me. And I don't want that to happen. So I just go along with what people say, and I leave it at that. In my mind, I can get around, I can do all the things I need to do, all the things I want to do, and I'm fine, even though I'm a little crooked. So that's sort of how perceptions and backstories work. So now I want to take you on a journey with me. And we're going to go to the grocery store. And it's one of those bigger stores where they have little scooter carts. And we walk into the store and we're walking down the aisle. And there's a woman in a scooter cart. She's say 35 years old, well-dressed. Looks really good. No crutches, no braces, no nothing. She's just in that cart. And we're walking and we're looking at her. And that little pain starts to nag at us. Why is that woman in the cart? Why am I not in that cart? I should be in that cart. My back hurts. She looks fine. Our brains run away with us. We start to look at things in a different way. The perception that woman has nothing wrong with her causes our brains to lash out. But the backstory to that woman is that she has MS. And she made it from the parking lot to the store. She got in a little cart. She can't walk anymore. She'll ride that little cart around. When she's done shopping, her body will have rested enough. She'll be able to walk back to her car. Our brains. We know the backstory. Now we know why the woman is in the cart. Now we feel much more comfortable helping her. Where we were starting to feel anger, Now we're starting to feel compassion. So we're going to move on to the checkout lane. So we get up to the checkout lane. We've had a pretty good trip, other than that woman in the car, but we've gotten over that because now we sort of have a feeling, yeah, it's okay. So we're getting up to the checkout line, and we see a couple people in front of us, and we look at them, and they're getting kind of angry, and the woman behind the counter is getting kind of angry, and the whole situation is starting to explode. And when we finally get up there, we look at this woman. She's mean. She's not even cranky. She's beyond cranky. This woman is downright mean. And our brains pick up on that. And so our brains go, oh, mean woman, I better be mean. So we jump on it. And where she says something to us, we just snap back at her because she's already mean, so now we better be mean back. We become indignant. The woman's meanness has caused us to be mean and hateful. And as she snaps at us, we don't know what her backstory is. We don't know why she's mean. We just know she's plain mean. But if we knew that story, it'd explain it all. This woman is a single mom. Last night, her child had to be taken to the emergency room where they stayed until about 3 o'clock in the morning. They got home. She had to get up at 6 to leave for work. She had to leave her child, her sick child, with somebody else. And if she didn't go to work, she'd lose a day's pay. And if she lost a day's pay and didn't go to work, her boss would cut her hours and then put her further into debt. And all this is going on in her mind. And it's making her mean. But our brain doesn't know that. So our perception is that she's just a mean-spirited person. But if our brain did know that whole story, our perception would change. We wouldn't be angry. We wouldn't find this woman to be hateful. If only there'd been a little sign at the beginning of the checkout lane that said, single mom, very sick child, worried about money. When we got up there, we would have been the compassionate you-use that we are. We would have tried to use soothing words rather than being harsh. And probably knowing that we're you-use, we would have taken up some type of a collection. With just that little bit of knowledge, just that little bit of knowing, the backstory or the history of a person, our perception changes. If we were to consider the backstories of those around us, if we were to consider who people are and where they came from, we as humans could be much kinder, gentler people. With just that information, we as humans would have the power to change the world. We are a kind and gentle people. We say we don't judge people. We won't admit that we do. But our minds play tricks on us. Our mind sees something and it immediately goes through that database. The slot machine starts spinning in our head. Overweight person. Saw that on some doctor TV show. That person ate way too much. This person must be like that. Judge them as someone who eats too much and needs to exercise more. Stopping and looking at people that we either find something wrong with or see as better than being ourselves and thinking about what their backstory might be will help us to see better that we are all equal. No one is better. No one is worse. We just have a backstory that makes us who we are today. The reality is, we are all equal. We are human beings. We live together on this earth. I am no better or worse than anyone in this room, anyone in this
things with my life. I may conduct myself a little bit differently. I'm just another human being who, at the end of my life, will take my place with those who have gone before. I'll have a simple headstone. And one day, someone will walk by and perceive from its size and its lettering what might possibly have happened in my life. We need to remember when our thoughts turn sour towards another person that they have a backstory, and that backstory may completely change our perception of them. We need to remember we are all people, and we are all human beings. Amen. Shalom. Blessed be.
We have some time for polylog today. So if you've been thinking about cemeteries that you've recently gone by, or if you have some other perceptions, backstories, other things that you would like to share, if you'd raise your hand, one of our ushers will bring a microphone. Or if you have any questions for Jay as well, you can raise them at this time.
Hi, my name is Janica, and while you were talking, I really enjoyed your sermon or talk. I was thinking about the fact that the older I get, the more losses and challenges I've faced in my life, the more compassionate I become, because I understand what it's like to walk in these kind of shoes or those kind of shoes or a different kind of shoe. So it's just ironic that I don't learn from the good times. What I learn from are the really hard times. And as such, I guess I, well, sort of value them, except when I'm in them. But I think you know what I mean. So maybe by the time I am in that gravestone, I'll be compassionate towards everybody.
First of all, I loved your talk. Really good reminder. A number of years ago, this is an Al story. Al and I were, I think it's maybe before we were married, we were in the Detroit airport. We were flying out east to visit his family. And for some reason, I'll blame it on him, there were a whole bunch of wheelchairs there. And we decided that I should be in the wheelchair and he should push me through the airport. So it started out as just sort of a fun, you know, type of thing. But it ended up just being so interesting because the way that people looked at me, and first they looked at my legs, and then they finally would look at my face, but it ended up being a really big, important thing that I saw. We still had a lot of fun doing it.
Hi, I'm Jesse, and is this on? Okay. Hi, thanks so much for your sermon today, and I really like the story for all ages, and I kind of wondered how the children would relate to that, and certainly I remember as a child seeing people who didn't have shelters and homeless, and it really had a major impact on me, having at least that, and maybe not other things, but being aware of that, what I did have. And so there is a person in my community who's been living, we call him a man who lives outdoors now, and when it's very cold, we see him with his tarps, moving from one location to another, and I am assuming, from my perceptions, that it's to find a warmer place. And when my boys and I drive by and we see him, we used to call him Bags because he had all these bags, and I really, that was before I was a UU, and I'm really sorry to say that out loud, but I want you to know that because I don't know his name, we now call him the man who lives outdoors, and we have conversations about perhaps he chooses that. We don't know his story, but I like to try to think of it beyond my own limited perceptions and try to dig a little bit deeper into what else it might be. Thanks for letting me share that.
I'm Jerry, and I'm reminded of, I remember once in our travels out west, we came upon a little town in Wyoming where the sign up front of the town said, 99 nice people and one old grouch. I just wondered who the old grouch was. But anyway, this all reminded me of an experience I just had yesterday about being judgmental. And I'm not sure what the right conclusion is, but here's what I found. I was helping with a campaign in Waukesha for a referendum on Tuesday to basically overturn the city, calling for a constitutional amendment to wit that corporations and unions are not people and money is not speech. So we were going door to door putting leaflets on people's doors. I came upon one house where he had in front of his house there was a gate and he had a chain on it and a big sign with a picture of a gun pointing at me saying, "He don't call 911. I, being judgmental, I did not put a flyer on his doorstep.
My name is John, and thank you very much for sharing a wonderful and useful message. As with most things that are complex, it makes one think a little bit farther, and I found myself thinking, well, then I guess, you know, I can empathize and forgive everyone, and it sort of takes you naturally to kind of a good place. But then there are those who aren't good and who choose not to make decisions, and we may be sympathetic for why they got there, but there are still choices, and you can say, well, it's not their fault, they're not able to make the right choice, but it gets kind of complex too, in that not everything is forgivable totally, and I guess it leaves my mind just a little bit. I mean, I really like your message, but I'm just kind of struggling as to take it a little bit farther, and I'm not sure what to do with it. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Barb. Thank you so much, Jay, for your sermon. I think we need to remember in all this that to have compassion for others includes ourselves. And to honor their backstory, we can honor our own. And I see this as well.
Hi, this is Angel. I just wanted to quick say that I just thought maybe you had osteoporosis like my mom, and you're both adorable. That's all.
Thank you very much for that sermon. That really, I'm really brought to mind some things that I have to struggle with, which is, you know, judging others. And so the perception fits right in with this. And one time I was talking to a friend of mine. I was having some issues, problems, and I mentioned that I think my coworkers or somebody my coworker wasn't, you know, looked the way they were dressed. And she pointed out that that was a pretty poor way of seeing someone. And because, you know, I have a tendency to always be very careful about what I put on in the morning. Do I look right? Does everything match? And God forbid if it doesn't, I better not go out the door. And so, you know, I work with a polyglot people, different races and nationalities, and for several years, I've had to really work at not judging people, not criticizing, because they might be, you know, if I judge them, they're going to be judging me, criticizing me. So I have to see them as human perfection, you know, and not see them anything but as they are. And as I've tried to do that, things have become happier for me, more pleasant, because I'm not looking for every fault, you know, in someone else. And then because I'm trying to be so perfect myself, and it's never going to happen, nobody's seen me that way. So, you know, I'm very grateful to be here today, and thanks so much.
Thank you. We have time for one more.
Okay, but I've got two. So.
Okay. Two it is.
Don't dare share one with me.
I have two and a half. I'm Eric. I have been involved with Hope Center for many years, as many of you know. And one of the things the Hope Center does is not ask the question, not find out the backstory. We don't care why you need help. If we don't ask, we don't determine that you need help. If you come to us and you want a meal, you get a meal. If you say you need furniture, you get furniture. And there was an interesting story that went around with the e-newsletter that the Hope Center sends out of some of the volunteers coming back from a furniture delivery with this story of having pulled up into this very affluent neighborhood into a home of, you know, a very valuable home of somebody who had requested furniture. And they drove up thinking, wow, this is right? This doesn't seem right. And they went up and gave away the furniture, and the woman there burst into tears and said, I realize this looks bad, but my children have moved back home. They're desperate. We don't have the funds. And you know, so I think it sort of the message is everybody has a story like you say, and kind of emphasize that. The other thing that I wanted to say is I was in a cemetery last week in Atlanta on the first day of spring. And it was a very interesting cemetery because it had a slave section, it had Confederate soldiers section, it had Jewish section, and you know, everybody there was the same except for one, which was very worn away, but on the tombstone you could see that the name was Winter, and Winter was buried there, so that one was a little different.
Release the microphone to you.
There you go. Thank you. This is short. This is Chris. This is a little bit aside, but it kind of reminds me of sort of the whole concept of what we're talking about. Yesterday I was at granddaughter Jenna's birthday party, and she's been having some struggles. She's going to be 7, and she's been having friend struggles, and somebody's not being nice, and somebody's trying to control her and all that. But anyway, we were getting ready to go to the birthday party, and you know, there's 8 little girls, and somebody said, you're my BFF. And Jenna said, I don't have BFFs. I just have Fs. So I think that's a good way to close. We're just Fs. So thank you.
Thank you. Please join us in the social hall after the service to continue the conversation. We extinguish the chalice here that it may glow gently in our hearts. May it light your path as you leave this place. May it guide your way until we are together again. Our closing hymn is Let It Be a Dance. So please rise in body or spirit and put on your dancing shoes and join in singing our closing hymn, number 311, Let It Be a Dance. We will sing verses 1 and 3. Thank you.
And now, may we go forth in the certainty of faith, in the knowledge of love, in the vision of hope, and in our going, may we be blessed on this day and forevermore. Amen.